of American ingenuity was and remains sad and appalling. There is in nature the power to adapt and to heal and to maintain. The ocean is a prime example where complex dynamics of light and movement, constantly changing, are allocated towards sustainability and survival. As we study the ocean, we find amazingly complex entities and systems that are interdependent and self-supporting, a simple outcome in a very complicated space. So complicated, simplicity holds it all together, immutable, unchangeable, soothing, nurturing, enduring. Only simplify, the philosopher says, reduce things to their essentials, and choose those that remove the cause of crisis, and apply imagination and energy to new forms of simple things that matter, the simple things that sustain life, not reduce it to a complex of rubble, waste, and war. Question complexity. Embrace simplicity. Oppose authority. Sustain nature. Recently, it was pointed out to me that my thoughts about these things resemble a new social science concept called eco-psychology, a view of the world solely as relationship between systems, an interconnection that accepts our belonging, not our dominance over nature. When I write over and over again, "The sea connects all things," it may be that I am simply an unaware, practicing eco-psychologist. We'll see.
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Do you love music but don't have the energy to find new stuff? Can't decide whether you want to hear indie rock or hip-hop, electronic music or singer-songwriters? Then tune into Another Late Night every first Saturday at 3 a.m. only on KBOO Community Radio, or stream online at kboo.fm/anotherlatenight, where we've got it all.
Hello, and you're listening to Eco Justice Radio. We present environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame featuring voices not necessarily heard on mainstream media. Eco Justice Radio acknowledges that we recorded this show on the traditional River Valley passage to the hunting grounds of Yellowstone for the Blackfeet and other Native nations in the place we call the Gallatin Canyon of Montana. Welcome, I'm Jack Eyde. On today's show, grizzly bears, guardians of the wild, and their battle for survival. We look into efforts to protect the grizzly bear in the northern Rocky Mountains in the face of efforts to remove their protections from the Federal Endangered Species Act. We sample several documentaries on author, elder, advocate for wild bears, Doug Peacock. And finally, we look into the recent demise of the greater Yellowstone ecosystem's most famous grizzly, 399. Doug Peacock, born in 1942, is a U.S. author, filmmaker, wildlife activist, and Vietnam War veteran. He is best known for his work dedicated to grizzly bear recovery in the lower 48. His book, Grizzly Years, In Search of American Wilderness and Serving as a model for the well-known character George Washington Hayduk in Edward Abbey's novel, The Monkey Wrench Gang. Doug is the co-founder of several conservation organizations, including Round River Conservation Studies and Save the Yellowstone Grizzly. Human intolerance, cruelty, and land grabbing, that includes habitat destruction spanning two centuries, has caused the extermination of the grizzly bears over 98% of its historic range in the United States. Grizzly bears were finally listed as a threatened species in 1975 under the protection of the Federal Endangered Species Act. The population viability experts say 5,000 grizzly bears are needed in interconnected populations to maintain genetic diversity over the long term. So we have two areas in the Northern Rockies, the northwestern area of the United States. The Northern Continental Divide ecosystem has 1,163 bears, and the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem has around 1,000. And they're not far away from each other, but they're separated, and there's no possible way for them to cross that state, populated by millions with their cattle ranches, highways, condos, shopping centers, and ski areas. You know, unfortunately, we look at these as dark and deadly forces. They may not be dark and deadly in the minds of those who are putting them, but they've gathered political momentum and vow to delist grizzly bears, turning management over to the states. And of course, this latest presidential transition might seal the bears' fate here. Trophy hunters and ranchers want to shoot bears. They have different interests there, but they want bears dead, whether they want to stuff them and put them in their living room or just have them dead and not be found and not be fined and not feel guilty. Well, the oil and gas, livestock, and timber industries and their owned politicians want bears out of the way of their pumping, chopping, and developing plans. So large, relatively secure core landscapes like national parks, designated wilderness areas, and de facto wilderness, those would be roadless areas on federal and public land, provide grizzlies with the greatest chance at long-term viability. But unfortunately, these areas are not large enough to support viable populations. And once again, they're not interconnected in the way that they need to be for these populations to thrive. Much more action is needed to protect, restore, and reconnect the fragmented ecosystems upon which grizzlies depend so they can reoccupy a significant portion of their original range. Or we could say they will never reoccupy a significant portion, but enough for them to have a foothold. Of course, this is, you know, and we understand the on-the-ground situation that grizzly bears are not about to reoccupy even any portion. And there are people who just want them pushed to a couple of national parks and be happy if you can take a picture of one of them when you're on vacation. So the push for delisting, which is coming up very soon, is premature by a long shot. And states lust for the blood money, which is license fees. You know, license fees might be a small issue in the overall scope of things, but it's really problematic. So that is what we're going to examine on the show today. We begin with Doug Peacock giving a commentary on the importance of wild grizzly bears and protection of wilderness and wildlife habitat from the 2019 documentary Grizzly Country, directed by Ben Moon and presented by Peak Design.
Saving the wild is the mother of all things. That's where we gathered our intelligence. I think it's essential for life, for growth, for wisdom. If we are to have survival, that's how and where it's going to take place. It's not going to take place on Mars or in any spaceship. It's going to take place in, you know, the remnants of that original habitat that we tend to call wilderness. The grizzly bear on this continent is the one animal capable of reminding the most arrogant species on Earth its true place in the world. And that's Homo sapien. Without our arrogance and firearms and dominion, we're just another flavor of meat. To live out on the land with a grizzly bear, you're not the dominant creature, and you're physically aware of that. You don't think about your portfolio or your girlfriend. You're looking and smelling, because you need to know where the grizzlies are. That's sort of an enforced humility, and it's a healthy thing. If you truly try to live in the land and not run through it like some mountain jogger, you know, you're going to take this in stock. A culture like ours, we fear what we don't know, and we really hate what we fear. To know the bear, to know the unknown, make a friend of that kind of fear, it does expand that tolerance towards all other kinds of beings. It's outside yourself. It approaches that quality of wildness that lives in all of us. What I've aimed to do is to save habitat. That's the most satisfying expression of joy I know.
That was Doug Peacock from Grizzly Country. Next, we continue with a 2021 documentary, The Beast of Our Time, Climate Change and the Grizzly Bears, narrated by Jeff Bridges. Clips featuring authors Doug Peacock, Terry Tempest Williams, and Rick Bass. The film is by Save the Yellowstone Grizzly and supported by Patagonia and Sierra Club.
I thought of the wilderness we had left behind us, open to sea and sky, joyous in its plenitude and simplicity, perfect yet vulnerable, unaware of what is coming, defended by nothing, guarded by no one. Edward Abbey. This wild, magnificent land is known as the Yellowstone ecosystem, that vast region surrounding the nation's first national park. All the original animals who lived here before the coming of the white man are still here. For the tribes, the greatest of these was the grizzly bear. We are at a crossroads. We now have the unholy power to decide the fate of other species. The grizzly bear's fate and ours are one. 50 years ago, grizzly bear advocate Doug Peacock sought to make a lasting record of their existence in the lower 48. Along with his best friend, author Terry Tempest Williams, they speak to the power and value of the wild.
We knew this was coming. We've been talking about this together, Doug, for 30 years. I'm surprised. I didn't think it would come this close. I didn't think we would be sent home, brought to our knees in this moment of reckoning and awakening. Mm-hmm. And I actually think it's a good thing. And I don't say that lightly. We almost lost my brother to COVID. He survived, but 200,000 people haven't. And we are not grieving them. We are not grieving the loss of species. We are not grieving the fires that are burning. We just go on as everything is fine.
And this is really the crucial time that we need our friendship. You know, we are passing the tipping point right now. We are just sampling the air from California and a little bit from the Pacific Northwest here in Montana. You know, the greatest threat to grizzlies in this Yellowstone ecosystem is climate change.
We are incapable of seeing ourselves as the problem. I think we are the problem, and that's why we have to learn how to live with grizzlies. That's why we have to learn how to live with coyotes or drought or fire lapping at our door.
I would not care to live in a world where there are not grizzly bears. That would be the final depletion of everything I love, not just in my American West where we are right now, but in the world. It's a final defeat of the wilderness here. It means the end of wilderness. It means that everything is unmistakably a human landscape.
You know, I still believe, especially now, that when we're all under siege with climate change, that we can connect with the heart of wildness and other species. So when I see a grizzly, I see the potential of who we really are. And I don't want to forget that. And I don't want our children and their children's children to forget that.
Climate change has obliterated the bear's most critical food source, the seeds from the white bark pine cones. Rising temperatures allowed the deadly mountain pine beetle to destroy the alpine forests. The decimation of white bark
is just the first gust of the hot wind blowing across the Rocky Mountains. David Mattson has worked for 35 years studying bears and mountain lions.
So where you are right here is in our backyard, which is along Seuss Creek, which flows down from the Absaroka Mountains. There's grizzly bears just a couple miles upstream. We don't have grizzly bears down here right now. Haven't seen them yet anyway. But this is emblematic of the kind of situation that more and more people are finding themselves in, where we humans have placed ourselves in the very best bear habitat, especially at lower elevations. So guaranteed, we're gonna have a grizzly bear wander on down this creek, looking for food that we have here in great plentitude, like chokecherry, like buffalo berry, like serviceberry. So this is a rich environment, and that's where we are. So we need to be prepared, and we need to be willing to allow bears to come down here and do what they're going to do. We have grizzly bears being killed at probably 2 to 3 times the rate they were 20 years ago, which begs the question, why? And that goes back to climate change. Climate change, which is changing the world for all of us, but it's had a catastrophic effect on grizzly bears, or more specifically on grizzly bear human relations. So what we've seen is a dramatic escalation in the numbers of bears dying because of conflicts over livestock and because of encounters with hunters. Climate change took out white bark pine. Because climate change took out white bark pine, it forced bears to look for alternate foods. The other alternative was meat, livestock, so cattle, sheep, or you can go to where humans are killing animals like elk. One of the key questions is, how do we find a relationship with bears to where we can coexist? Bears and people can live in the same places at the same time. It doesn't take that much for us to create the kind of space where coexistence can happen. It takes a certain amount of prudence. It's like me maybe being smarter than my dog. Grizzly bears really don't have that much trouble accommodating humans. Grizzly bears can live with us just fine.
When grizzlies leave their sanctuaries in national parks, they must pass through ranches and other private property. Climate change has driven this migration. They're looking for new sources of food. Encounters with livestock tend to result in dead bears, but they don't have to.
I get extremely emotional about this because, like Doug and like my family, we are amongst the bears every day. And it is not a situation of reading about it and feeling deeply connected. It is being deeply connected. And what we used to be was the bad guy, and we still are to some degree. But we have an incredible capacity to become the good guy.
Just north of Yellowstone Park, a number of ranchers have provided an accommodation for this migration of bears. One of these ranches is run by 3 generations of the Anderson family.
We have bears.
We have lots of bears,
lots of wolves,
a couple foxes,
and a couple coyotes.
We've grown, I feel, and I say that with a lot of humility, because I think there's a tremendous amount to learn about how to effectively, you know, coexist with the grizzlies. I think our biggest learning curve occurred with the wolf reintroduction, and we were pressed hard to explore different sorts of strategies on how to really manage our domestic animals more effectively.
It's fair to say that there are some places on the landscape that might not be great for cattle, and we're aware of that, and we're just always observing and looking at the changes. And it allows us to look at community in a different way. It's not just ranchers and livestock. It's a really large system already at work that we're really enjoying being a part of.
I'm sad to say, or I just believe, that most of what humans do and the design of our systems is not a win-win at all. It's a win-lose, and we've got to find a win-win. And to do that, we've got to think first of the landscape and then figure out how to make it work for us, rather than picking up the pieces later and trying to rationalize our way through it.
You know, I to be honest, don't look at the grizzly bear any different than I look at any other wildlife on this place. It certainly has a magic to it, but I think that everything has the same sort of magic, and we also have that. And so it's just a great place to watch them and learn from them and remember that they have survived and they're resilient through adaptability and just being able to change with the times. They're the ultimate teacher of change.
What may appear to be a small little deal in the world, in the ecological system, it might be huge.
The science is clear on the effect of climate change on the greater Yellowstone ecosystem's carrying capacity for grizzly bears. Leading expert on the outbreak dynamics of pine beetles, Jesse Logan was the project leader for the U.S. Forest Service and now studies the collapse of whitebark pine, one of the Yellowstone grizzly's prime foods.
When we predicted and published in the scientific literature what we expected to happen with global warming and whitebark pine, it's really one of the early examples, maybe the first example of an ecological prediction well in advance of something that played out almost exactly as our models had predicted. What we saw was essentially a complete collapse of whitebark pine forests. But one thing that was different, it happened faster than we had anticipated. And the thing about whitebark that was really a valuable food resource is it kept them up in the high country, away from people. Wow, grizzly claw marks. Now, these claw marks are evidence of grizzlies down here low. It's becoming more and more common, in fact, really common this time of year in the fall when they would have been up in the high country, be down in this low country, looking for other food resources, biscuit root, things like that.
What do we tell our grandkids? That we sat idly by while the last of the grizzlies vanished? As bears adapt, moving from wild to rural landscapes, we need to learn to coexist. Louisa Wilcox has been a fierce advocate for the Yellowstone grizzlies for 3 decades, challenging trophy hunting, challenging delisting from the endangered species list, and keeping a broad watch on the lives of bears.
Under my desk is a huge box of 400 records of grizzly bear deaths in Yellowstone. In it are a number of stories that tell a lot about how grizzly bears are dying, about carelessness and thoughtlessness and people being unprepared to be in grizzly bear country. There are some dead bear stories that are tragic. One day, this bear found itself in the wrong place at the wrong time. When a hunter hunting alone, afraid at dusk, armed with no bear spray, encountered this bear. And he shot and killed it. Some of the most important and wonderful voices for the grizzly bear are tribal people. 270 tribes and traditional societies signed a treaty opposed to trophy hunting grizzly bears. And when you look at trying to connect grizzly bear populations that have been long isolated in the Northern Rockies, to connect those populations to each other, and you look at the lands the tribes either own or have legal claim to, you suddenly get a picture of possibility that the tribes have a key that is critical to the grizzly bear's future.
Yellowstone grizzlies are threatened with extinction. They are cut off from vital genetic diversity. We must allow them to reunite with their counterparts in the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem if any of them are to survive. Author Rick Bass is a passionate defender of all things wild. He has lived for 34 years with the last remnant of the grizzlies of the Northern Rockies in the Yak River Valley.
I live up the very northwest part of the state, and Yellowstone's grizzlies are trying to get back to the Yak. They were there once, an unbroken stream of grizzlies moving from one mountaintop to the next, raising a family on one mountain, the young going to the next mountain, raising her family there, hopscotching from one mountain to the next, down to Yellowstone and back. It's really hard to be a grizzly right now. I mean, We've got trails going through their little meadows up in the Yak. We've got mines down in the Cabinet Mountains. We've got, you know, Gallatin County subdivision and road building going around Yellowstone. We've got industrial recreation. We've got white bark pine extinction. And yet they're still here. I mean, they're still trying to connect those five little gardens where they are. They're still trying to grow back to reclaim, you know, what was once their nation. To have only 25 left in the Yak, they're called the Walking Dead. I don't want to see them vanish. The judge who ruled twice for the Yellowstone Grizzlies, saying we can't hunt them, the judge had a very simple question for the government. If you shoot bears when they come out of Yellowstone, how are they going to get to the Yak? They're not, are they?
That was from The Beast of Our Time, Climate Change and Grizzly Bears. Hey listeners, quick break here. We hope that you're enjoying EcoJustice Radio. Stay connected by subscribing on all major podcast apps and visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check out previous shows and guests, listen to extended episodes, and get connected with us on social media. Today you're listening to Grizzly Bears, Guardians of the Wild and Their Battle for Survival. I'm your host, Jack Iden. We sample several documentaries on author and elder advocate for wild bears, Doug Peacock, as well as on the recent demise of the Greater Yellowstone Ecosystem's most famous grizzly, 399. We continue with The Beast of Our Time, Climate Change and the Grizzly Bears, narrated by Jeff Bridges.
Native people, we didn't grow up with mirrors. Like my ancestors 200 years ago, my great-great-grandmothers didn't have mirrors. What they had around them was the landscape, where the animals looking back at them to look at, and they were reflected back to themselves in this beauty and this country and this wildness and this landscape. So our dances and our stories, they were about what we saw. And we saw bears and elk and mountain lions and minks, and that's how we saw ourselves.
Cindy Furman is a poet, author, and co-editor of Native Voices, a collection of poetry and prose.
The grizzly bear, who is slowly disappearing from this land, is not being represented, is not being counted, is being forgotten as something that used to exist here that doesn't exist anymore, that is part of a historical past but not important to the ecosystem. When we finally make the decision to save these places, to save the black bear and the bull trout and the salmon, to undam our rivers, to save the Yellowstone grizzly, we will ultimately be saving ourselves. So when we think about the West, when we think about this continent that we're on, that we call North America now, we have to start seeing ourselves as part of this very delicate ecosystem that is hurting right now, and realize that it can't hold us forever if we don't start giving something back.
The survival of the species depends on crossing barriers like freeways and railroads. It also requires a measure of human understanding and tolerance. Leading the freeway crossing effort is Lance Craighead of the famous Craighead family, pioneers of modern grizzly bear biology.
I've been working with Doug Peacock and Save the Yellowstone Grizzlies on trying to get grizzlies across I-90 out of Yellowstone to areas further north. And this will be more and more of a pressing need with climate change, as animals need to move across the landscape to find a better living condition.
It's absolutely critical bears be able to pass from one mountain range to the next, even if they're island ranges. You know, Yellowstone's an island ecosystem. There are grizzlies at the north end of those mountains right there. A culture like ours loves to build power lines and pipelines and freeways, absolute barriers to migration.
And you can improve an existing bridge or underpass for $200,000. So it's really cost effective. Just put some fencing in there, could do a little landscaping, and it's already pretty nice for animals, but it's noisy and they can still get scared and run up on the highway.
The grizzly is our ally in our defense of our shared wilderness home. They are calling out a warning by example. Climate change knows no boundaries, spares no life. If we shun their warning, the consequences will be severe. We know what we have to do. The grizzly's fate and ours are one.
That was from The Beast of Our Time, Climate Change and Grizzly Bears. The next clips are from the documentary Peacock's War from 1988, originating from PBS Nature.
Once you go into grizzly country, you are automatically entering a system where man is not the dominant animal. You don't have the option of blowing the bear away, and therefore you have to deal with the bear. If you want to have that great bear out there, I think we have to accept him just as he is, with all his cantankerousness, with that indomitable quality about him. I came back in 1968 after the Tet Offensive, but I got to a lot of places in Vietnam before the war did, and it wasn't a terrible place. I loved the people, I loved the country, it was wonderful. There were tigers there were deer there. I was a medic and was under the illusion, at least, that I was doing some good along the way. But after the Tet Offensive, it was altogether too much. I was a real basket case when I got out of there. I started filming grizzlies in 1975 full time. That meant I had to move to either Glacier or Yellowstone National Parks, essentially, because those are the only places that had any bears left. I came up here late in September from the North Cascades, and I walked up to the Apgar Mountains, and I stood on the top of the highest peak there. I counted 14 grizzly bears, and I looked off in the distance, and there on the top of a mountain was a fire lookout. So the next year, I put in one application for one job in the whole world, and it happened to be Huckleberry Lookout, and they were stupid enough to give it to me. I'm not out to take the greatest chances that I can take. I'm simply out to finish this project with the grizzly. It's a great hunk of my life, and I'm close to wrapping it up in some way, but that involves an element of risk. My dreams are filled with dangerous encounters with bears. Sometimes the bears are ferocious and even a little unnatural. It's curious, but it's also very practical. I work out all my fears and my dreams, and then when I get out there in the real world, I don't have to bother with them much. A couple times a week, sometimes I'll dream of bears. The grizzly, especially among the Plains Indians, was always something more than a bear. A symbol more than anything else. Of courage and power. A sort of awesome being who was sent down on earth to humble men, to make men humble. I have a relationship with this one bear. I'm very drawn to the bear. He's my most important grizzly bear, but he's also the most dangerous animal I know. And he's the one that keeps destroying my gear. He's the one that ate my t-shirt, for example. He's the one that ate my sleeping bag. He's the one that essentially chewed to pieces everything that smelled of me while ignoring lots of other things. And the quintessence of the grizzly year for me comes when I go out and I see this one animal. Some years I don't film him, but I make sure he's there. If I ever get mauled or seriously hurt or killed by a grizzly, it'll probably be by him. And yet, the high point of my year comes when I find him. It could be incredibly hypocritical for me to go out and pretend that I'm making a film that's going to benefit and help grizzlies and invade the last territory, the last few bears we've got left here, and also carry a big piece just so if things don't go just so-so, it's not my turf, blow them away with a .44 Magnum. I don't think that'd be it'd be poor manners. You don't have the option of blowing the bear away, and therefore you have to deal with the bear. And that teaches you a lot. You learn a lot about bears. You learn a lot about yourself by having to stare down grizzlies.
When was the first time you ever saw a grizzly close up?
Well, it was in Alaska, and I was a punk kid packing a .44 Magnum on my hip, and we were hiking across some sort of open country. And all of a sudden, at about 100 yards away, a grizzly sees us, stands up, and immediately just charges. Doesn't hesitate, nothing. I take my .44 mag out, and I've got them all ready to go. And I've been reading all these horror stories about grizz and all these macho books and talked to all kinds of hunters. And I knew after about 2 seconds I wasn't going to shoot the bear anyway, you know.
The bear kept coming?
The bear kept coming up to about 15 feet away, then it sort of lifted up its front paws, not really a rear, but sort of lifted up, caught our scent, and veered and ran away just as fast. Uh-huh. After that, I quit carrying guns in Grizz country.
Well, what would you do if a bear charged you?
You got to stand your ground, because there's nothing else you can do if there's no trees to climb.
And well, there aren't.
No, and bears do this to each other all the time. Most charges are bluffs. Of course, you never know until it happens. But if you stand your ground, the odds are the bear will stop and veer, turn off.
You think that people that are killed by bears, that it happens because they try to run away? Or they try?
Well, that's where a lot of people get hurt, because they move too quick when they should be standing their ground, and they trigger the predator instinct, because grizzlies are predators part of the years, and part of that instinct is there. So if you get charged by a sow with cubs, and she's only 40 feet away, and you make a move for a tree, she's likely to conclude that charge. But if you stand there and just stand your ground like another dominant bear, 99 times out of 100, she won't.
Should you have your arms out?
I guess I do, because I think it makes you look a little larger, that's all.
Uh-huh. What is this supposed to, help, or what?
Yeah, this just, I think this helps. Smoke is a natural, is a natural scent, and they just don't pick up on other smells as much if you smoke your clothes. I think it sort of hides or camouflages your human scent,
uh-huh.
which is the main things bears key off of. They key off movement. Their hearing is a lot better than ours, but their nose is just unparalleled in the animal kingdom. They can smell a human being a mile away. It's true.
Well, what happens if we're up there sleeping and a bear comes along?
We got to hear the bear coming. And we
got to hear the bear coming.
Yeah, he makes a lot of noise too. And then
you climb a tree?
No, I usually make a little noise and talk to him, and it keeps him at bay. But he's a dominant bear, and he never runs away very far. So all we can do is if we hear something out there in the brush, I'll wake up and I'll get up and I'll walk around and I'll talk to this animal, try to keep a fire going most of the night. It's not a time of year when you can get much sleep up there. It's
Well, I don't know if I want to stay up there tonight.
I don't blame you. Neither do I.
Well, I hope you're willing to stand my ground for grizzly.
We'll be okay. Honest. It's just going to be a sort of tense night, maybe a sleepless night, that's all. We'll make up for it later. And I think it could be beautiful tomorrow if it snows. It's better to have snow than rain. Rain is miserable up there.
I was in the hospital in Da Nang during the Tet Offensive. I'd extended my tour twice. They should have gotten me out of country about 2 months before I actually left. By the time I got back out to the countryside, the Tet Offensive started to catch up with the countryside. They came back from cities and they hit the outlying areas. I watched everything that I'd really tried to do, which is build dispensaries and hospitals, rebuild a couple of villages. Everything was burnt to the ground. Everything was level. Unfortunately, a sergeant got a hold of the radio when I wasn't around to stop him, called in airstrikes on the VC, who were herding villagers across the river, and they killed a couple hundred civilians. They were, you know, they're all women, children, old men. So I sat there and pieced together bodies for 4 days, and after 4 days, I didn't have anything left. Just craziness. I was out of the country within 48 hours. I went a couple of years without a serious conversation with anybody in a way. If it wasn't life or death anymore, it no longer concerned me. I was a real marginal part of the human race right then. That's when I first started hanging out with grizzly bears in Yellowstone.
So the therapy that worked for you was to be in the mountains.
To go back out and crawl back into the brush. It's just something that works for me. It helps if I have other things around, like grizzly bears, that force you to take a less myopic view of yourself. You can't take yourself too seriously, being confronted with big bears. Self-indulgence is just totally impossible in grizzly country.
You said that you backed that bear off a ridge, and that was the night that the bear
allowed me to pass.
The bear allowed you to pass.
Mm-hmm.
But then that night was the night.
All night long, I got back up to the top. I knew I was going to see that bear again, so I built a little tiny fire right on the top. Within 20 minutes, I could hear crunch, 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 crunch. Here comes this big bear. Mm-hmm. I get the fire burning a little bit. I take some bear grass plumes, which don't burn very well, lace them with toilet paper, get them burning like a torch, walk off to the side of the hill and say, "Hey, grizzly bear, why don't you back off a little bit," or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the bear does. But then 20 minutes later, he's on another side of the mountain, and here he comes again. Crunch, 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 crunch. I get more bear grass burning, go off.
Mm-hmm.
He does this till 2 in the morning. At 2 in the morning, he finally leaves me alone, and I go to sleep.
You were able to sleep?
I was so tired.
If someone that you knew well was hurt by a bear, would it change your feelings at all about grizzlies?
No.
Well, suppose it was someone who knew what they were doing, who did everything right, who hung up their food, who really knows how to camp, and despite all their precautions, just by some freak.
Well, I think that person would also be aware of the fact that once you go into grizzly country, you are automatically entering a system where man is not the dominant animal. Mm-hmm. And in the configuration of things that are really possible out there is the possibility that a grizzly bear can tear up your camp for no fault of your own, or mm-hmm. tear you up. It's an element of risk, and it's an element of, that I've struggled very hard to try to protect in wild places, because we don't need our wild places all safe and tame. We need right. a few untamed last vestiges that we can go into and enter the conditions with which our first white ancestors hit this continent with 400 and 500 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think it's something which by its very definition is uncontrollable. I think it's unmanageable. I think it's uncompromisable wilderness. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing we can do. If we want to have that great bear out there, I think we have to accept him just as he is, with all his cantankerousness, with that indomitable quality about him. And we can't have the bear on our terms. He's not going to be non-aggressive. He's not going to be shy. He's going to be exactly what he is, which is mm-hmm. a risky proposition. If I didn't have a place to go that felt as wild as country has to be to support a grizzly, I'd go nuts. I can't imagine living in this world without knowing that place is there somewhere, even if you don't get to it.
Yeah.
Let's figure when we're 74, one last epic journey into grizz country.
Yeah.
If that's the only trip one ever takes and it's only in one's mind, it's still good enough.
That was Peacock's War, a film from PBS Nature in 1988. Hey listeners, quick break here. We hope that you're enjoying Eco Justice Radio. Stay connected by subscribing on all major podcast apps and visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check out previous shows and guests, listen to extended episodes, and get connected with us on social media. Today you're listening to Grizzly Bears, Guardians of the Wild and Their Battle for Survival. I'm your host, Jack Iden. We sample several documentaries on author and elder advocate for wild bears, Doug Peacock, as well as on the recent demise of the Greater Yellowstone Ecosystem's most famous grizzly, 399. The next clips come from the 2024 documentary, Grizzly 399, Queen of the Tetons, from PBS Nature. Sorry to report that Grizzly 399 died on October 22nd, 2024, after being struck by a vehicle on a highway in Snake River Canyon, south of Jackson, Wyoming. The film includes Grizzly 399's most dedicated photographer, Thomas Mangelson, research biologist Trevor Bloom, and former grizzly bear recovery coordinator for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Dr. Chris Servine.
It's a big job to take care of four cubs and to keep track of them, to keep them out of trouble, just like children. Unlike wolves, which are very social animals that live in packs, grizzly bears are solitary. And so it's all mom. Mom is the total source of information and protection for all those cubs.
Across the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem, cub survival rate is only 55%.
The number one cause of mortality for cubs in the wild are male grizzly bears. Male grizzly bears, they see a sow with cubs in the spring. That's mating season. That female won't mate with him if she has cubs, but he can kill those cubs and push her into heat. It's pretty savage that bear would then mate with him afterwards, but that's how it works. And so the males will seek out killing these cubs. Grizzly Bear 399, she developed a unique behavior where she actually raises her cubs in proximity to traffic and to humans. And the reason is that male grizzly bears do not like people. They don't like being seen by people. They definitely don't like traffic. Grizzly 399, she learned over time that if she hangs out within 100 yards of the road, she has these people around that are in a way protecting her cubs from the male grizzly bears, which is very, very intelligent, and it's very well suited to the national parks. But now it's become far more complex to survive that proximity to humans.
The bear jam is what we call just when all the traffic gets jammed up because there's a bear. In 2011, we were probably starting to have 100 cars at a bear jam. Now all of a sudden there might be 400 cars. It turns into total mayhem.
She's coming, she's coming, she's coming.
All the things that could go wrong in one of those bear jam situations, you know, as a bear biologist, we'll just kind of go, whoa. People look at her and think, oh, she's idyllically living in the national park, isn't it? Just wonderful. But bears that get close to people lose their normal avoidance or fear response. And that's called habituation. This is good in a way because it allows them to live in places where there are people, but it also is risky because it puts them in closer association with people.
399 has been so good at getting her cubs across the highway. Waiting by the roadside, looking both ways, and then she'll cross the road and call her cubs. Sometimes one will be left behind, and she'll go back across the highway to say, you guys stay here, I'm going to get Joey. I always think it's like Russian roulette every time they cross the road. Russian roulette. But she's managed against all odds. Except one time, and that was snowy.
In 2016, 399 came out with a single cub. Really light-faced cub, so it just got nicknamed Snowy.
She was a single cub, one of the only single cubs that we know that 399's had. 399 played with Snowy a lot. They were just, you know, so much fun to watch. And then 399 was crossing the road at dusk, just north of Pilgrim Creek, and Snowy was hit by a driver that didn't stop.
They never found out who hit the cub.
And 399 picked up Snowy and took him off the road. Laid the body by a big spruce tree. And then ran up and down the road, bawling all night long. You could feel 399's how distraught she was. That was a really sad day.
All right, you guys ready?
What's the top of your list? The bear?
Grizzly. Oh.
Grizzly. Grizzly bear?
So 399 is by and far and none the most popular and famous bear here in the Tetons, and probably in all honesty in the world. We are within minutes of where I was told to maybe go. I need you all to keep your fingers crossed, think positive thoughts. And this is a bear jam. So let's hop out.
Right there, in the trees.
Right there, there's mama. There's mama right there, right there. Yeah. It's right there.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, here she is. She's real. Look, look, right there. Right there.
Oh, I see. I see her.
Keep that on her.
Grizzly bear management is incredibly complex. Certainly there's a lot of passion by people who really enjoy the opportunity to see grizzly bears, are really passionate about bears. The grizzly bear was listed under the Endangered Species Act in 1975.
We probably had 30 females left in the Yellowstone ecosystem. That's it. The Yellowstone bears were about to go extinct. They would be gone today, but now they're here because they were listed. And caught them just in the nick of time. You know, they're kind of the epitome of a challenging species to recover under the Endangered Species Act. You know, they can conflict with people, whether it's garbage or livestock or whatever. They can kill people. They have killed people.
Bear management will likely continue to adapt and evolve as we move forward. You said you're in the Pilgrim Creek area, is that correct? So it is very possible that you did see a grizzly there. When a grizzly bear is in conflict with humans, we investigate the circumstances And we evaluate what are our management options. Sometimes that might mean capturing that bear and relocating that bear to a different part of the park or a different part of the ecosystem. The unfortunate reality, sometimes that might mean we may have to euthanize a bear and remove it from the population.
399 has habituated, and all of her offspring are habituated because her offspring learn from her. If she gets into a situation where she becomes really dangerous to people, she's probably going to have to be removed. We don't want that to happen. We never want that to happen.
There's a lot of knee-jerk opinions about roadside bears.
Nice color behind me.
This is a living, intelligent, emotional being. Won't everybody just leave the bear alone? Only the wild owns the bears.
Getting pretty far.
Bear watchers are gathering early this year in anticipation of Grizzly 399's emergence from the den. They hope the famous Bruin will emerge this April with all four of her cubs. The famous family's presence in Grand Teton National Park is expected to draw large crowds again this summer.
It's day 13 waiting for her and haven't even seen a bear, let alone 399. Watching her basically over 15 years every season, you just have to wait. It takes so much patience and waiting, but that's what I've done all my life. I was hoping she would come out a week or two earlier than last year because the cubs are much bigger and they're a year older. Last year I spent 145 days out. I mean, that's half the year. Stupid amount of time. You know, all those days I probably photographed her 15, maybe. The payoff is great, but it's a hell of a lot of waiting.
All four cubs are just running. She's fine. They're playing. Now they stop for a second. They're healthy as heck. Finally, after 2 weeks, waiting every day, all day. Oh, look at them go. Wow.
Man, she was like full of energy. Just the cubs are running ahead of her. That was really cool. They ran for like 3 miles there, full out. I'd love to see them run.
Spring, when they come out of the den, they're just looking for any kind of food. By now, the cubs are big. You know, they're all hungry. They've been in the den and haven't had anything to eat for months. At first, they're grazing right along the side of the road, so they're easy to spot. But then 399 started moving south, heading south out of the park.
Grizzly bears are a transboundary species. Here in Grand Teton, we're a relatively small national park. Most of our grizzly bears actually use areas outside of Grand Teton when food sources are really scarce. But grizzly bears outside the park, certainly some controversy involved.
We didn't see her much all summer because 399, she started being very elusive. It was very unusual. So it started being much harder to find her. She was getting in all these people's beehives and was going through neighborhoods on somebody's porch.
Oh, and no, it's $3.99.
What?
Oh my God.
It's like a zoo here.
Uh-huh.
She really started changing her behavior, and that was really, really stressful because there's just so many things that can go wrong once they get out of the park.
I'm a fifth generation rancher from Sublette County. When I was a kid, I spent my summers with my granddad, and we moved cows, cowboying, they call it, in the mountains up here. Never saw a grizzly bear, never heard of a grizzly bear, other than up in Alaska or Canada or somewhere else. It really varies year to year. I mean, last year we lost as many as 10 or 12 cattle to bear kills. And we don't mind feeding a grizzly once in a while, but we're trying to feed people, not grizzlies. Bear 399, she's a beautiful animal. But I think they habituated that bear and her cubs to people by chasing her all around, and everybody wanted to see her. And they didn't let her be a wild bear. And, you know, those things come back to haunt wildlife most of the time.
What does a person do with their yard, right? Do you just let everything just grow wild in your yard? You manage your yard. And this is your yard. This is everybody's yard. It's public land. It ought to be managed properly. I would like to see the state of Wyoming be able to manage the bears themselves, and that would mean hunting. Allow, you know, a hunting season on the grizzly bears, which is fine. I think they should be here, but they just need to be managed to a certain number. And that number's, we're over it.
They are a beautiful animal, and they take really good pictures. They're also a dangerous animal.
As great a mother as 399 might be, and as cute as the cubs might be, she's in fact a grizzly bear with long teeth and claws and can do substantial damage to a person in certain situations.
You know, they can conflict with people. Actually, the first time I ever heard of 399 is when she mauled a guy in the northern part of Grand Teton Park.
15 years ago, 2007, I've used to get up early and go for runs and hikes, and so I wanted to do that in the national park. As I'm going up this path, all of a sudden there's 399 and her cubs, and I'm yelling, "Hey, hey!" She was charging right at me, but just turned and stopped right next to me, arm length away. I stepped directly away from her, and I stepped off the edge of the road, and I had to take quick steps to keep from falling down. That moment, she charged right at me. She bit me in the back, and at that moment, I had this thought that they're just going to eat me. The next thing that happens is I hear this voice yelling, "Hey, hey," and then there's more commotion. Then I hear voices. Then this paw leaves my leg. When I got to the hospital, a Park Service employee asked what I thought should be done with the bear. I did not want to see anything happen to that bear. It was not at all her fault.
In a surprise encounter, she was feeding on an elk carcass. She had offspring with her. The Park Service called me. We agreed to leave that bear on the landscape and not do anything to her because it was what we call a natural aggression. And so that was a long time ago. But it was a recognition that there were more and more bears in the Jackson Valley and they would be moving south and there'd be more people around.
Grizzly bears, there's so much controversy there, mostly because they're still protected under the Endangered Species Act. The grizzly bears in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem, they've recovered more than 7 times of what they were. And so Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming have petitioned for the grizzly bears to be taken off the list. And that is on the table right now. That is the intention of the Endangered Species Act, is that an animal recovers and then they're delisted. The majority of Wyoming wants that to happen. The ranchers want that to happen. The hunting community wants that to happen. But the argument for keeping them on the list is that we're not seeing any gene flow between the distinct populations. Here in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem, we've got a really healthy population. Up in the Bob Marshall Wilderness and Glacier National Park, you have another population of grizzly bears, and there has not been gene flow between those two populations, meaning there's a genetic bottleneck.
Grizzly bears need connected landscapes and corridors in order to make that gene flow possible.
Recovery, in many people's opinion, would be defined by when those two populations can interbreed. Some people would argue that we should let that happen first before they're delisted. If they get delisted, they're gonna get hunted. 399's behavior is a great behavior within a national park. If there was a hunting season for grizzlies, it would be a horrible behavior to be that tolerant of people. If there was a hunting season, it would actually be some of these roadside bears that would be the first to go.
That whole fall was just always, you never knew where she was going to be. And it's all private property. So the game and fish were chasing people out.
And we're all worried that she's going to get in trouble.
From a management like perspective, I mean, she's a nightmare. Everybody was like, oh my God, she's in this neighborhood. Now she's in this neighborhood. Now she's back in the park. And you talk to people that work for the Forest Service. They work for the Park Service. They work for U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Wyoming Game and Fish. The public is like telling them they need to do this. They need to like protect this animal. There's so much pressure on them.
That was Grizzly 399, Queen of the Tetons from PBS Nature. Hey, listeners, to check out the extended recording of this show or to explore our other shows, visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, and subscribe to our podcast. This has been Eco Justice Radio and our show, Grizzly Bears, Guardians of the Wild and Their Battle for Survival. Thank you to Doug Peacock and PBS Nature for incredible documentary work on grizzly bears, and thank you to our listeners for joining us. Please connect with us on social media at Eco Justice Radio, SoCal350, and Wilder Utopia. If you like what you've heard and want others to be informed, subscribe and share the episodes. You have been listening to Eco Justice Radio, a project of SoCal 350, executive producer and host, myself, Jack Eit, co-host Carrie Kim, and engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.